And we're taking your phone calls this hour with Lon Milo Duquette as we talk about his work, his latest book, Low Magic. Next hour, we'll have open lines right here on Coast to Coast AM for you. 2012, December 21st, just a few months away, Lon.
I know.
It's amazing, isn't it, how fast it's come up?
I know.
What do you think's going to happen?
To tell you the truth, I don't know. But I know that something is going on. And something is happening with the world. Something is happening with time. Are you noticing that time isn't what it used to be?
I'll tell you, what about time? It's going by too fast.
It is going by too fast. And it's not just, we're not just saying that because we've had fun talking tonight. Time is, a second isn't what a second used to be.
Well, you know the little clock that's in the corner of your computer, mm-hmm. the little timer?
Mm-hmm.
Even that seems to be going faster.
Yep.
That's what's so weird.
Yep.
I'll look at my watch, and it's different from the time on the computer. I'll reset the computer. It'll speed up again.
Yep.
Something's happening.
Something is happening, and you know, the quantum physicists are quick to point out that we don't exist in time and we don't exist in space. We exist in space-time. Okay, it's one thing, and they're now saying that space-time is a manifestation of consciousness, and something is going on, and way back in 1904, you know, Alice.
Do you remember that? I wasn't here.
No, even my father wouldn't have remembered that.
All right, good.
But
I didn't think you looked that old.
Well, thank you. Aleister Crowley had this revelation that the age had changed, and that there's a new formula, and there was a beginning of a new dramatic shift in human consciousness. And back in the 60s, we remember the 60s at least, don't we?
That's right.
Okay, we remember the musical Hair and the dawning of the age of Aquarius. And with the popularity of astrology and the idea that we are going into an astrological age or approaching the astrological age of Aquarius has got people thinking in terms of a new age, a new cycle. And now even with on just kind of mainstream public television, we've got these shows called The Great Year that talk about this galactic center and the cycles, the yugas. Something is happening now. Whether it is connected to this magic date, December 21st, 2012, or if that is just an arbitrary date picked because of the famous Aztec or Mayan calendar, I don't know, but I do know that things are changing. I see socially the Arab Spring, the revolutions all over the planet. Sure, there's always been unrest. Okay, but there seems to be a change sweeping over the world, and I'm only half joking when I say in biblical proportion.
I agree. Let's take some calls here. We'll go to Randy in Benton Harbor, Michigan, east of the Rockies. Hi, Randy. Thanks for calling. You there? Nope. Guess not. Let's go to another one. Anthony in San Marcos, California. Anthony, welcome to the show.
Hey, thank you for taking my call. How are you guys doing tonight? Well, this morning.
Doing fine, good. Anthony.
All right. I just have, a bad cloud or a bad aura around me. Is there anything that you can advise me to do to get rid of this, or is there anything you could say over the airwaves? Say, okay, you know, hey, I want you gone out of this guy's life forever, and don't come back, and all the good to come in. Please say something or do something.
Please, the first thing that I usually suggest when people say that they've got a cloud hanging over them or a dark aura or something like that is first of all start approaching things physiologically and start getting yourself physically healthy and start with your breath, getting a lot of good fresh air, doing good, healthy, sane breathing exercises. Whatever you would do over and above that, you would need to start doing that anyway. The cloud that you're talking about is as much indicative of your psychic health as it is your physical health. And so at least start with your diet and your own physical well-being. Secondly, do not underestimate the power of love. I know that sounds like a corny cliche, but love is an energy. It's a noun. It's a real thing, and a lot of times. Love is like a current, like an electrical current. It's an alternating current. You give it and receive it at the same time. And if there's a blockage in either your ability to receive love or to give it, I would examine myself and see where you might have a problem there. But there is, it is a cliche, but it's a true cliche. There isn't anything, any miracle that is too big for love to handle. And that's just my take on your.
Lon, does any of this scare you, this ability to use magic, what you call magic, to get things done?
No. No more than any other ability to affect change in your life, including any skill that you would learn to make a living. And I may be just unique in that, but early on, I dropped a whole lot of superstition from my life. And
how'd you do that?
I don't know. I was even as a child, I was not quick to be superstitious about things. I always had a confidence in my own intelligence.
Mm-hmm.
And when I felt that something was unhealthily superstitious about either the religion that I was being raised in or even other things in my educational bringing up, I was quite confident in saying no, that's silly. You know, that wouldn't happen. I don't even care if grown-ups believe that. That's silly. And so that took away a lot of fear. And I think that's part of the magician's arsenal of skills, and that's why King Solomon was such a wonderful archetypal figure to be the archetypal magician, because Solomon was fearless in going into the presence of God, and he had the audacity to say, "Give me wisdom." He didn't say, "Give me." You know, did they give me, gold or silver or the wood to build the temple? He says, "I'll take care of that. Just make me smart enough. Just give me the wisdom to see things clearly, and then I'll take care of it. If I have that wisdom, and I think if you go for that wisdom first, if you drop that superstition, you don't even have to generate any courage. It's just that you're automatically there. You're not afraid of devils or demons or things like you watch these documentaries where scientists study spiders and sea creatures and stuff, and they just pick these horrible looking, scary looking things up, and they just pick them up with their hands and look at them and study them scientifically, you know, and go, oh, look at its pinchers, you know.
Sure.
That would just scare me to death, you know. But it doesn't, because they've got the wisdom, their natural curiosity, the natural scientist in them makes them fearless, and that's what a magician or any spiritual seeker needs to be. It's a wonderful, wonderful, bizarre, and colorful, and wonderful and scary and beautiful universe out there, and fear is just the last thing an explorer needs.
Let's go back to Toby in Augusta, Maine, east of the Rockies. Hi, Toby. Go ahead.
Hello. How are you doing, guys?
Good, Toby.
Hi, Toby.
Good. Thanks. I have studied a little bit about the Freemasons, and I've heard you bring up many key terms. The cabal, you just mentioned wisdom, and also the occult.
Mm-hmm.
And as far as I know, the occult means the hidden.
Right.
And as I understand it, that applies also to the Bible. Like, there's a hidden interpretation, and which has to do with the worship of Lucifer, and I do not mean Satan, but the worship of wisdom over the worship of God. And I think that what 2012, I think the test is whether people will embrace God or embrace wisdom, because wisdom entails man ruling man, and the opposite is God's rule over man. Are you familiar with any of this, or
I'm familiar with sort of where you're coming from on that, and with all respect, I differ with the fundamental things that man, the wisdom that man would want from God is somehow separated from God. I think you make a very small concept out of a God that would somehow be jealous over the wisdom that he or she or it has given to its creatures. So I think, at least in my opinion, that your fear of that is the result of falling prey to spiritual institutions that have, for the last 2,000 years, had a vested interest in keeping us incredibly afraid of growing.
You, when you wrote the book Enochian Vision Magic, and we of course talked about that, again, for those people who aren't aware of that, what is Enochian?
Enochian magic is a magical system that was developed by Queen Elizabeth I's court magician and court mathematician, Dr. John Dee. But the term Enochian refers to the seventh person from Adam, according to the Old Testament, Enoch. And Enoch was a person that literally could talk with angels and could talk directly to God. And in a way, Enoch was the archetype of the type of character that I was talking about when people lived in a golden age.
Sure.
And so Enoch represents a level of consciousness, that golden, high, awake level of consciousness that I think that all of us could wake up to. And over the years, there's been lost books of Enoch probably the technical book of Enoch was written about, or at least the first part of it was written around 300 BC, and the latter part of it probably around 100 BC. But it was never a part of the canon of the Jews or the later the Christian Bible, but it was known. The Book of Enoch was known, and in the Book of Enoch is where we find one of the first examples of the story of the war in heaven, the fallen angels.
That's right.
And a hierarchy of spirits and all of that. So a great deal of what we think is Judeo-Christian biblical Bible-based doctrine concerning heaven and hell and fallen angels and stuff doesn't come from the Bible at all. It comes from these other texts.
How do we know those stories, Lon, are accurate?
I think they're accurate as spiritual documents, but I certainly don't think that they're accurate as historic documents. Like our one caller just pointed out, I guess Toby pointed out that occult means hidden, and there's I think a lot of the book of scriptures was written on many levels, and that they tell a story. As a matter of fact, the whole science of Kabbalah is trying to dig out the hidden esoteric meanings behind some of the very curious stories that if you just read the narrative, you go, I don't think that really happened that way, and I wonder what this is really talking about. And for years, literature was used that way. The Semitic languages are very, very rich in metaphor. And it was nothing to speak in metaphoric terms, and trying to get very deep spiritual concepts out of it. And we've sort of lost that ability. Shakespeare, in a way, in reinventing the English language in the way he did, was hearkening back to this wonderful use of words, metaphors to paint deeper spiritual pictures, and we sort of lost that, but it was very rich in the Old Testament times.
Sure was. Well, Lon, when we come back in just a moment, we'll take final phone calls with you here on Coast to Coast AM. We're talking with Lon Milo Duquette. His latest work is called Low Magic. It's all in your head. His website linked up, of course, at coasttocoastam.com. And when we come back, we'll take final calls with Lon. Next hour, open lines. Did you see the story of the father who was playing around and he put his kid in a washing machine at a laundromat? Almost killed the kid. Some people were able to get that thing pried open. But we'll talk about that in open lines, because I want you to share with me some of the strangest stories you've ever seen. Back in a moment on Coast to Coast AM. Well, like I said, next hour we'll have open lines for you. I want you to share some of the most bizarre things you've ever seen. When we come back, though, with Lon Milo Duquette, we'll take your calls on Coast to Coast AM. And welcome back to Coast as we talk about magic with Lon Milo Duquette. And your phone calls will go to Mike Truck Driving in Tennessee to get started. Hi, Mike. Go ahead. Mike? Well, we don't have him either. Let's go to Cranston, Rhode Island. Hey, Bob, your turn. We'll try you.
Hello. Hi, Lon.
There you go.
93, Lon.
Well, 93.
Yes, I used to practice magic about 20 years ago. We had temples set up Golden Dawn magic.
Uh-huh.
And I'm thinking I'd like to get back into it. Is it difficult to get back? I remember a lot of the different things, but I'd like to practice more.
Oh, I don't think it'd be difficult at all. Just find yourself some people in your area where it's convenient to get to, and I'm sure they'll be happy to see somebody as experienced as you come aboard.
Are there a lot of people practicing this lawn?
Yes, but not as many as you would think. Probably the biggest organized magical organization in the world is Ordo Templi Orientis, or the OTO.
You're part of that, right?
I'm part of that and have been since 1975. Oh, gee. And there's only about 3,000 worldwide, maybe 3,500. Who are active, members of that organization, and so as movements go, it's not huge, but it's neither is it a money making proselytizing thing. Magicians are notoriously solitary.
Most of them. Nancy in El Paso, Texas. Hey, Nancy, go ahead.
Hi, George.
Hi.
Can I give a shout-out to my sister in
Florence,
South Carolina? Lorraine in Florence, South Carolina. I turned her on to your show, and it's taken me every bit of 18 years to get through to you.
Well, I'm glad you made it.
There's magic for you.
Well, you know, I'm very open, to knowledge and all that, but I fear what I'm hearing because, George, lately we've been hearing a lot of people coming on, not just your show, all over the place, and they seem to be trying to get us to accept this as some form of knowledge. I believe, that we are all magic, I've had experiences where, that I believe we have it in us and we can make things happen in good ways. It all depends on, the kind of vibes that we're putting out. But I also believe that there are things out there that we can call up that, instead of practicing our magic from within, we're reaching out and we're using these ghouls and spirits and stuff like that. And I'm not a religious person, but I do believe the Bible is a handbook. It tells us certain things and guides us, and I'm not religious, but I do think this is sort of creepy to me that the whole world, at least in this country, a lot of people seem to be bowing down for this magic stuff.
Well, you're right. In Lon, a lot of people are, aren't they?
Not as many as you'd think. I'm probably the only guy on the block, me and my wife, in my neighborhood.
What do they think of you?
They like me very much. It's when people get to know a person, just person to person, you don't think they're.
So they don't run from you.
No, I'm a pretty harmless.
It's the occultist. Run.
No, as a matter of fact, I had. Recently, I was interviewed by the local paper here, the Orange County Register, and they did a full page, front page article on me because I'm getting back into music and have made a CD, and so the guy came to interview me, and he wrote that he was afraid that I'd be showing up in black robes and with wands and everything, so he didn't know what to expect. And he ended up staying with us 8 hours. He interviewed us for 8 hours.
That's pretty impressive.
And it was a delightful interview. And and he could see that this was not. A dark.
Right, I understand.
Yeah.
Let's go to Wichita, Kansas. Hi, Jeff. Take it away.
Good morning.
Morning, Jeffrey.
I think it's just really intriguing the way your guest is bringing out the true aspects of magic. I'm a Christian and a theologian, and you know, occult is just simply that which is hidden. And his reference to the speeding up of time in yours, there's a reference in scripture where it says that God has given man dominion. And I believe that God has given us dominion in the earth to declare what reality is going to be, which ties in with what he was saying about string theory and the new physics, that space and time is really a concept. Isn't that what you mentioned?
Yes, absolutely. Yeah, we seem to be on the same page here, Jeff.
Absolutely. And, yeah. And what I see is that because technology has prevailed here, the world has kind of shrunk,
mm-hmm.
you know, and knowledge is covering the earth like the waters cover the sea.
Mm-hmm.
And that shrinks space. And space and time is shrinking, and there's references throughout Scripture about time being done away.
Time is no more. Yes.
Yes.
Right from
yes.
the book of the Revelation. Yes.
Absolutely. And so much of there's so much fear in religion today.
Yes, that's
you know,
bad.
And instead of, like you said, love, and love promotes light. Love promotes wisdom. Love promotes, you know, seeking out these things.
Yeah.
And I don't know why people are afraid of magic. I mean, they think it's dark, and it's the darkness that keeps them bound to their fear.
Yes.
But
wow.
I just want to thank you for what you're doing and your perspective and making Enochian magic just simply knowledge that was given to Enoch.
Well, thank you very much for you're saying things better than I could have said it. So.
Next up, we go to Benicia, California. First-time caller, Jay's with us. Jay, hi.
Hello.
Hi, Jay.
Hi. I have two questions.
Okay, Jay.
The first is, what are your thoughts on demons once being gods? And do you believe that Crowley is currently incarnated? Because he believed that he was, for instance, the reincarnation of Eliphas Levi and Cagliostro.
Right. Well, let me start with that one. I don't know. I've in my 35 years or more of studying Crowley, I've met quite a few people that claim to be Aleister Crowley's incarnation, and if they are, I would be extremely disappointed in his choice of vessels. But I really don't know, and occasionally I'm being asked. I'm asked by people that email me to recognize them as such, and I don't have the discernment to know that I'm barely sure that I'm alive after my own birth. I'm not in any position to judge whether anybody else is. As for demons, you were formerly gods. Remember what we were talking about earlier? How I saw these. A lot of this, at least on one level, is metaphoric of our own falling asleep spiritually. In that case, using that metaphor, yeah, demons used to be gods. Matter of fact, in a way, you could look at what we are misconceiving as demons being, we're only seeing them as such because of a defect in our own powers of perception. And just like sometimes very scary things occur to us in dreams, but they're really symbolic of something very
sure.
wonderful that's happening. It's a defect in our own powers of perception at the moment.
Have people, Lon, ever confused what you do with being a Satanist?
Yes, they do, and or they would be quick to label it as such if,
right.
if they didn't understand what it's about. And Satan as a concept, as a deity, the way most Christians, I guess, or even Muslims would view it, is not a viable concept as I understand it. I think a deity that was as evil as a god is good means that the god that is good is not big enough to contain its own opposite.
That's a good point.
Yeah.
Let's go to Joseph, truck driving in Missouri. Hey, Joseph, good morning.
Good morning, George. I'd like to say first, thank you for all you do and all the people involved with Coast to Coast.
You are welcome. So much so. Thank you.
And about 6 weeks ago, John B. Wells had George Pratt on.
Yes.
And he mentioned Code for Joy, which I finally got my copy of the book when I was home this last time, and it really is quite a book. It's I thought it was very interesting that your guest was talking about breathing as a way of centering or clearing or balancing oneself, which George talks about a great deal in his book as well. That's step number one, basically, is clearing in the four-step process. But, it really is incredible. If we can learn as beings to work together for the common good of all, rather than the detriment of many to the benefit of a few, and stop, the other individual mentioned dominion. And what we really have dominion over is ourselves, not each other. We're not supposed to lord it over one another, but rather to control ourselves.
Yes.
To be self-controlling, self-regulating, rather than trying to have someone else regulate everything for us.
Good point.
And I just, again, really, you really do an incredible job, George, and I just really appreciate all that you do.
We've got a great staff. You're welcome, Joseph. Drive carefully out there. Lon, as we only have a few minutes left, we'll take as many calls as we can for you before we say goodnight. Where does this go with you and with the direction of the stuff you've been doing?
I sort of take things one step at a time and one day at a time. If I had planned my life out strategically, maybe things would have be a little different. But I'll give you an example of something that just took place just like a year ago in New York City. I'm playing music now again after about a 25 year.
Yeah, you used to work with Sammy Davis Jr., didn't you?
Yes, and
I bet that was pretty cool.
That I was in the late 60s and early 70s. I was a musician and a working musician and a singer songwriter. And I more or less gave it up because I sort of wanted to raise a family, and
nothing wrong with that.
And that kind of lifestyle was just a little too fast for me. And so now that I'm old and safe, I picked it up again. But I was in New York City, and I had just finished playing at a place called Cafe Vivaldi in Greenwich Village, beautiful little place. And I had an experience. Now, I've been studying about varieties of mystical experiences for years and years, and I know Kabbalistically on the Tree of Life which level of consciousness is which, and what levels of initiation bring which shifts in consciousness. But as far as a major epiphany was concerned, I had more or less just stopped expecting anything to happen. All the meditation and the magic that I've done over the years had accomplished wonderful little things, but I hadn't had this overwhelming experience that I'd read so much about. And I was just literally watching a video of all things, two people dancing the tango. Don't laugh.
Maybe a little chuckle.
Okay. But it was just so beautiful. It was just so absolutely beautiful. And there was this one move where the man pulled his partner backwards, and she drug the tips of her shoes across the floor, and it seemed like she was passive, but in a way she was in control too. And something snapped in my head. I understood this idea of giving and receiving love being the same event. And something clicked.
Yeah. Well, I hear you.
Something clicked in me, and I had a full-blown experience that, to tell you the truth, I'm still experiencing even as I'm speaking to you. It changed me. I feel physiologically changed, as well as mystically changed. And I see this the love thing as the key to all of this magic, as the key to all of our spiritual aspirations. I see this love thing as the key that's going to see us through what is probably going to be a pretty bumpy ride on planet Earth.
Let's just not fall out of the roller coaster.
Let's just not fall out of the roller coaster. And I think the thing that's going to keep us strapped in is love, our love for our fellow man, our love for the universe and the supreme consciousness, whatever you want to call it, is we are a part of it. We're an important part of it. And I see this, I see love as being the key. And I guess that's why I'm now singing love songs.
Well, good for you, Lon. We'll be back in a moment. Open lines on Coast to Coast AM.